Live from Nashville, Tennessee, it's Saddle Up America on the Equestrian Legacy Radio Network.
Horses, tough cowboys, were all that I knew then. Each one was tested and true. Chasing wild cattle through mesquite and thick choya, thorn dripping right through our hides. Brush popping cowboys, we hit that brush running and trust to our ponies and ride. Wild Texas cowboys riding for our bread, back in the days of my youth. Riding, whooping, roping, we drug them from the brush. Yeah, I once rode with the best. Long days in the saddle in that South Texas heat, our skin burned deep by the sun. On horses hot and lathered, punching holes through the brush, spurring to our cowdogs on the run. We roped them where we found them, tied off hard and fast, flip the rope, trip them to the ground. A tough cow horse to hold them, we'd bail from the saddle to wraps, and the hooey tied them down. Wild Texas cowboys riding for our brand, back in the days of my youth. Riding, whooping, roping, we drug them from the brush. Yeah, I once rode with the best.
Our friend, Mr. Jim McGarvey, past national chairman of Backcountry Horsemen of America, and he's brought a special guest along with him today, so we'll let him introduce her in just a moment. But Jim, how are you doing, my friend?
Doing very good, thank you, Gary. Glad to be here again. Always fun.
It is always fun. And you have some fantastic guests with you every first Thursday, so... Tell us.
Well,
who
I know
got
a lot of important
today.
Good people, and that's what it is.
I think.
But
you
I do. I have Monica Chapman. We go back not numbers of years, but a good while. Monica is with the American Endurance Ride Conference, and we'll talk about that some more. And she is an official with the American Endurance Ride Conference, and I think Monica, I'm thinking back, we I know we met maybe first at the American Horse Council's annual meetings in D.C., but you've also been to the Backcountry Horsemen National Conventions, and we were both at the International Trail Symposium last year and in Dayton, Ohio. And so, Monica, glad you could join us today. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Good, thank you. And this is we talk generally about trails on the show, sometimes strictly the horse, but with the American Endurance Ride, it's about trails, of course, riding on trails, and it's about riders, but the emphasis is also equally on the horses, and I think it makes it such a commendable organization to learn about, and we hope to learn about it some more today. Monica, again, thank you for joining us. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, just an overview of what the American Endurance Ride Conference is about, what it tries to do, where does it?
Yeah. Yeah, AERC was incorporated in 1972. Our home office is in Auburn, California, and we average around 5,000 members a year. The what endurance riding is it's a long-distance equine event, which we ride 25 miles in 6 hours, 50 miles in 12 hours, or 24 hours to ride a 100-mile ride. So
wow.
It's a timed event. It's first across the finish line wins, but you have to go through a veterinary examination with your horse before the competition, approximately every 15 minutes during the competition and at the end of the competition. So horse welfare is of our utmost importance because they're our buddies. We want to ride them for years to come, and so we don't want to do anything to hurt them. We have
thank you.
I was going to say, we have about 900 competitions throughout 9 regions of the United States. So we're nationwide, probably not Alaska and Hawaii, but in the continental United States, we have competitions in almost every state. We probably have the majority of our competitions tend to be on the West Coast and East Coast, but the middle part of the United States is well represented also.
The what is your position with the maybe a little bit background of when you joined American Endurance Ride and when you joined and why, and then what you're doing today for them?
Okay. I joined in 1995. I saw a program on TV, and I already had a horse that I was spending hours riding the back roads on the weekends already, and I thought, wow, you know, that's right up my alley. I'm not going to have to ride by myself. I can meet new people. And, you know, add in a lot of competition, which, you know, kind of made something fun out of it. And so I had moved to San Antonio, Texas area, and I asked my local veterinarians if they knew any endurance riders, and they hooked me up with some people, and here I am. I've been I have over 10,000 competition miles. I am the vice president of the American Endurance Ride Conference, and I'm also the trails and land management co-chair of that committee. And that is how I ended up being chair of the trails committee, is when I met Jim and Randy Rasmussen with BCHA, and and that's when I really got involved with trails. Kansas, where I live now, had just got a BCHA chapter about 6 months to a year before I met Jim and Randy, and so that all, you know, kind of went together really well.
Mm-hmm. Well,
Jim, you did something good. You did something good.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, the endurance ride folks, the trails. Are such an important portion of that, so much of their work. How do you pick them, or how do you pick a trail to be an endurance ride location?
Okay, so yes, that can be tricky at times, because just because there's a trail there doesn't mean it's suitable for an endurance ride. Since we are a timed event, you have to be able to do that trail. You have to average, depending on the amount of veterinary hold times you have during the competition, you usually need to average around 5 miles an hour to finish in time. Well, that's a trot. So if the trail is so technical, you have to walk the majority of it, then you're probably not going to use that trail for a competition. Now, that doesn't mean that everything has to be a flat Forest Service road. You know, you just need trails that can have a combination that you can spend some time cantering to make up for the times that you have to walk. And that can be challenging. And depending on where you live in the United States, in some parts of the United States, predominantly out west, they have, like for a 50-mile ride, they can do one great big 50-mile loop, and they can have vet exams in designated places out on that loop. But in some places, like where I'm at around in Kansas, we don't have that much non-private property that allows us to have big loops. So many times we have a 10-mile loop and a 15-mile loop, and you keep coming back into camp, and sometimes you have to do them over, which, you know, that's not always the most desired choice. But, you know, if you want to get a ride in, you do what you got to do.
Right.
And so it just depends on the part of the United States you're in. And so that is the way we kind of – sometimes, unfortunately, we don't get to do the most scenic trails for competitions because of the time factor. But that doesn't mean we can't ride them the rest of the time. Just doesn't work out for competition.
Right.
Well, I guess
right.
I guess one of the important components when you're selecting a location for competition is you got to have a camping or a sizable parking lot to accommodate everybody and facilities and all that.
Yes. Yes, I mean the and that is becoming one of our challenges. You know, I've only been doing endurance since '95. But you talk to the people that have been doing it since the 70s and 80s, you know, people were using tents, a truck, and a two-horse trailer. Well, that didn't take up near the room that the four-door duties pulling the four-horse LQ trailer is taking up. And so, yes, there are some competitions, especially on Forest Service land, that the trails may be there, but there's not a campground or a big enough campground. And so then you spend time trying to find a private landowner that lives close enough to the trail that you can rent their property. You know, sometimes we have campgrounds that have hookups, but then other times you're just camped in somebody's pasture that they've mowed down. And then, you know, the event manager will bring in water trucks, you know, to have plenty of water, but then, you know, you're just kind of on your own for everything else. So there's a wide variety of what you'll find. Our national championships actually in a few weeks, it's September 20th and 22nd at the Biltmore Estate in Asheville, North Carolina. And so, you know, we have some rides that are in, like, these amazing properties, you know, like the Biltmore Estate.
Yes.
And then, you know, others are definitely more rough in it. So it's just a very wide variety.
Gary, have you ridden at the Biltmore?
I have not. I've been to the Biltmore. Beautiful facility.
Yeah.
Toured the
place.
Yeah,
I need to probably put it on your bucket list. It's we were talking, you know, with Craig Huffines, American Quarter Horse. As I'm saying, the fastest I've ever ridden was along the French Broad there at the, you know, Biltmore on a horse. And but it's then you know, you look up and see the great mansion, and you ride into the woods. So so you've had several rides over the years, haven't you, at the Biltmore, as I recall? Or?
Yes, yes, they have two rides a year annually.
Mm-hmm.
And I did the ride out there 10 years ago. Yeah, it was 10 years ago. And then I'll be going back out there in a couple of weeks to do the national championship.
So it's the national championship there. Not just Southeast, but the National? Okay.
Yes, it's the National Championship. And last year our National Championship was in Colorado, and then this year it's at the Biltmore.
Now,
so
on the campground, I mean, I can envision it in my head. Is it the campground area and the along the river, is that all suitable enough for y'all, you know, that fits in for the program? Imagine it would.
Yeah, I mean, when I was there 10 years ago, you were predominantly just parking in a grass parking lot.
Right.
And then they had big tents set up for the dinners, and they have porta potties and stuff like that. But I don't know, with it being the National Championship, if it's changed a little bit. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But they always put on a great experience. And, you know, the endurance riders, we're a pretty tough group. We're used to getting dirty. So it's like, you know, there's many times you're on trail and a thunderstorm blows through, or I don't know, I've been hailed on, I've been in a dust storm. I've probably been in about everything, because when you're on trail 7-8 hours a day, you can't predict what's going to happen. So, you know, we don't require a lot of high maintenance facilities.
So
that's good to know.
I mentioned it to my nephew about the show this week, and you know, he's not a horse person, it's about American Endurance Ride, and he says so. He's sort of like the Iditarod, so in the mushing with the dogs, but except that while it's a race, you don't race head to head or nose to tail. I mean, it's a timed event, right? And you go out at
maybe
you can tell us a little bit how that competition works.
Yeah, there are a number of different types of distance organizations out there. There's competitive trail, there's endurance. But in endurance, a local competition will usually have, for example, a 25-mile ride and a 50-mile ride. And usually in my part of the country, the 50-mile ride starts pretty much at daylight. And then the 25-mile ride may start 30 minutes or an hour later. But all the 50-mile competitors start at the same time. I mean, they basically just holler, trails open, and then everybody takes off at whatever pace they choose. You know, some people, if they have a young horse that gets excited real easy, they may wait a few minutes so they don't get caught up in the excitement. It just depends on you and your horse. Like I said, the 25s then will all start 30 minutes later at the same time. And so, yeah, you may ride by yourself all day. You may ride with friends all day. You may have a race to the finish. The great thing I like about endurance is it's a sport that you can cater it to what you want it to be. If you want to run up front, then you can run up front. But like our point system, I always kind of ask people if they're NASCAR followers. And this would have been, I don't know how NASCAR does points anymore, but it used to be that the guy that won at the year end didn't necessarily have to win a lot of races. He just had to finish up high. Well, that's kind of the way our point systems work. Because if you're fair to your horse, you're not going to run for first place every 50-mile ride, because that tears the horse up. Unless you just have that exceptional athlete, which are very few and far between. And so for the people that maybe only have one competition horse, but they want to participate every 2 weeks or once a month, they may choose to ride at a much slower pace and finish. But, you know, if you finish every competition for every, you know, so many weeks during your ride season, because, you know, depending on where you live in the country, the ride seasons are different, you can still place well at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And many of our regions have regional clubs, and many of those regional clubs have their own points and award systems. Like one of my personal goals for myself is to finish a ride in every state. And I figure that goal is not going to tempt me to override my horse. And it's going to get me out and see parts of this beautiful country that I'll never see, because I'm not hiking 50 miles. It's like I just can't hike that far. But on the back of my horse, I can see, I can see parts of this beautiful, awesome nation on the back of my horse, and I don't think there's anything better to do.
Well,
but
you know, this.
It's,
yeah, yeah, I agree.
And so the point system within AERC, you can make it what you want it to be, you know. And you and we track your mileage, we track your horse mileage. What we are most coveted awards are called the Decade Team Awards, and that is you and your horse have to do at least one 50-mile ride for 10 years. So we
are
promoting longevity of the horse. We want a rider to use that same horse for 10 years. It doesn't necessarily have to be 10 years in a row, because maybe you have a mare and you give her a year off to have a baby, or maybe your horse has an injury. But, you know, there are many horses that don't really get going in the sport until later in life. You know, for whatever reason, they just don't get going. But so we love our winners. We love everybody. I mean, if you win, if you get disqualified because your horse came up lame or whatever, we just want everybody to have fun and enjoy themselves and to respect their horse's welfare.
Oh, that's great.
You know, you made a point about you know, seeing the beautiful, you know, God's country in 50 states and all the states. You know, we've talked about the differences between walking, say, hiking, mountain biking, or riding a horse on the trails. With hiking, you do have to look like 10 feet ahead or kind of down some to make sure you don't, you know, trip over root and stuff. And then with mountain biking, it's 20 to 30 feet ahead so you don't hit a rock or a tree or something. But with a horse, you have the advantage that I don't think that those folks have not been on a horse, just to be able to ride it, a walk or a trot, and just look at God's country, you know, from about 7 foot up or 8 foot up off the ground, and just looking out over everything. It's a different experience being on a horse, and I don't think everybody, if you haven't been on a horse on a trail, you don't appreciate that feeling or that what you experience. So it's a good point, and I can envy you doing the horsing. I think I've counted 12 states or something, I don't know, but good. Well, let's how do you prepare? Do you mark the trails, or I mean, let's say you've got your trail, you know, you're getting ready here on a Friday to have the thing on Saturday. Do you have to do stuff to the trails, or are markers on where to go, or what do you have to do in that way to keep everybody on the trail?
Yeah, it's somewhat regional. There are some rides where you're required to bring a GPS, and they will download the GPS coordinates, and then they will check your GPS at the end of the day to make sure you followed it. I have yet to experience those type of rides. They tend to be more out west. In my part of the woods, they usually hang surveyor's tape. And then, you know, you follow, like, say the trail has a 10-mile loop and a 15-mile loop. Well, one loop may be blue surveyor's tape, and the other loop may be red. If a trail has good enough permanent marking, then sometimes you only need to hang ribbons or, like, pie plates with directions at intersections. You know, there's times you have to have spotters out on trail to make sure everybody does it right, you know, and they check in with each location. But yeah, usually the trails, depending on the land managers, you have about a week ahead of time to hang up the ribbons, and then a week afterwards to take them down. But that is all very individualized on the property. You know, some places, in Texas, for example, they do a lot of competitions on private ranches, and some of those places are more lenient because it's private property, and, you know, and they can do what they want. But, yeah, the biggest thing is we have to find sustainable trails, because, you know, with all the wacky weather in the last few years, and especially in parts of the country that have dirt and not rock and sand, you know, you can't have 50 horses out there tearing the trail up if it's raining. And so you need to try to locate sustainable trails. And then we also are limited, and I know there's not a lot of wilderness property in the United States, but wilderness properties do not allow competition. So there are a few of our noteworthy rides that have, you know, because our organization was created before many of the states adopted the Wilderness Act, that our trails have had to be adjusted because the competition is no longer allowed in certain areas. So, but then on private property, that's usually not an issue.
Monica, let me ask you a couple of questions. How many folks do you usually have showing up for a competition?
Well, that's very regional also. You know, I'm around the Kansas City area. I'm going to say if you have a total of 40 to 50 riders between all the distances, that's a good showing. When I compete in Texas a lot, they'll have more like 100 riders.
Wow.
So it just kind of depends, you know, where the members live. And some people are willing to drive farther than others.
Right.
It seems like you tend to have a big turnout around major metropolitan areas because, you know, there's more people. But the very scenic rides, you know, are very popular because of their scenery, and so they can get a lot of, you know, a lot of riders too. Many times those kind of real far out, way in the middle of nowhere rides that are popular because they're more than just one day of competition. They may have 3 days of competition. And so then that way it makes your gas money worth more because you may be driving farther, but you're going to get to ride 3 days.
Right.
And so then that throws a different kink in your planning for how you're going to ride your horse. Because if you're going to ride the same horse 3 days, well, you can't use him all up the first day. Or maybe you have two or three different horses, and then you just alternate between them.
Right. And that brings up another question. How many days of competition do you usually have?
That's regional also. In my area, it's usually just one, sometimes two, but in a lot of areas, they're all two-day rides, Friday and Saturday or Saturday and Sunday.
How is that divided up? Do 25 and 50 both days?
Both days, yes.
Okay.
Right. Now, there are some areas in the upper Midwest where they will do just a 25 the second day. It kind of just depends on your membership. Because if you're not going to have any people enter the 50-mile ride the second day, then, you know, you don't want to pay your veterinarians and pay the extra fees for it.
Mm-hmm.
So your membership just kind of dictates what you plan.
Right. And so I guess with the younger horses, a lot of times they'll start out with the 25-mile, the limited distance rides, and the more experienced horses will do a 50-mile. Is that right?
Yes, and we've had introductory rides around for many years, but they're just really gaining in popularity the last 3 or 4 years. And those are usually 10 to 15-mile rides with no time limit. But the people still do the veterinary exam before and after the loop. So then they kind of get to experience camping with their horse. They go through the veterinary exam. The horse is exposed to other horses passing them or them passing horses. Because, you know, when you're moving at speed, sometimes, depending on where you live, it's hard to get a horse used to those things. You may just not have the ability to find somewhere to practice that. So the introductory rides are becoming very popular, and the age for the introductory rides and the limited distance rides or 25-mile rides is 3 years old. And you have to, your horse has to be 5 years old to do a 50-mile ride and 6 years old to do a 100-mile ride.
Okay. All right. How many veterinarians will you have on site?
If all the vet checks are in camp, they usually average 21 vet per 20 to 25 riders.
Okay.
And, but if it's a competition that may have out-of-camp checks, then they might have to hire more than that because of the way, you know, the logistics of how everything falls. And then they'll also usually, depending on the competition, they'll have extra veterinarians in case you have a treatment issue or, you know, an accident or something.
What are the vets looking for? What are the vets looking for?
Okay, there's usually when you, like the night before, they'll take their heart rate to get their baseline pulse, which is normally 28 to 40, depending on the horse, and that's beats per minute. And then during the competition, your veterinary exam or hold will not start until your pulse reaches. And it depends on the ride, but anywhere from 56, 60 up to 64 beats per minute. And that's told to you ahead of time. And then check your mucous membranes, your jugular refill, your pulse, your gut sounds. They're supposed to be checking for all four quadrants of gut sounds. And then there's muscle tone, anal tone, and then they do a lameness exam. You have to trot out in a straight line 125 feet and then turn around and trot back. And so if your horse is considered a grade 3 lame, you will be pulled from the competition.
Okay.
Which that is lame at a trot, and a consistent lameness in a straight line. But many riders, if they know their horse is off, even if it's inconsistently, many riders just go ahead and pull out of competition. They don't want to make it worse.
Gotcha.
Now, sometimes you lose a shoe, and then you'll put on an easy boot, and then you can go on out. So sometimes it depends on the situation.
Okay. Can they reshoe a horse?
Yeah, if there's somebody there.
Okay. All right.
I have had that done at a few rides.
Yeah, I started to say better have a farrier around too. Yeah, so that's great.
Yeah, the bigger rides will do that.
Yeah, when let's say that you have 50 horses that are competing, what kind of percentages do you have on horses that actually will complete a race?
So our 100-mile completions are. And I'm not going to have this exactly, but the 100-mile competitions are usually, around 50%-ish.
Really?
Think about how many steps, 100 miles.
That's a lot of steps, yeah.
It is. I mean, there's more lameness disqualifications than metabolic disqualifications at rides, you know, and you know, the thing that it's, you know, too bad is they can't always tell us when you get up the morning of the ride, today's not my day, maybe we shouldn't be doing this. You know, some horses can convey that better than others. You know, we've all had stoic horses, and then we've had horses that let you know everything. The 25 and 50 mile horses have a much higher completion rate. So much of it depends on terrain and weather. You know, if it's 90 degrees and really high humidity, you know, there's not going to be as apt to have as high of a completion rate, you know, because their heart rate won't recover. And then sometimes,
right.
to be honest, the riders don't recover. I mean, there's nobody there
that.
Checking the riders.
Yeah. I was going to ask that question.
But yeah, that happens. There are many times you look at ride results because we have an option called for getting out of a ride called rider option, and that's purely on the rider. So, I mean, you'll sometimes look at ride results and say, gosh, they had a ton of rider options, and then you find out that, oh, it was really hot and humid and a bunch of people ended up not feeling well. So, you know, you got to get the scoop on, well, what was the circumstances for that particular ride? But it's
which leads to another question. How do you, as a rider, prepare to do a 50 or 100 mile competition?
Well, you ride a lot, and then for me, I have found the older I get, I'm 49 right now, that I need to do cardio of some kind for about an hour three times a week.
Okay.
Now, when I was younger, I didn't need to do that at all. And everybody's different. But, you know, when you post 50 miles, it, you know, it'll wear you down. And then you need to, if you're going to be doing hot and humid rides, you need to be riding in the heat and humidity. Because
right.
your body needs to adjust. Because
right.
you're not doing your horse any favors if you're all over the place.
That's right. That's right. Jim, I better get to work now. Hey, I want to come back in just a minute and talk about the big race a little bit and find out what we can find out about the Tevis Cup. And that's a pretty big race. That is a pretty big race. But before we do that, let's take a pause and listen to a song by Junie Fisher. It's called A Horse Like You. And if you haven't heard this one, Monica, you're going to like this one. This is A Horse Like You by Junie Fisher.
You never mention when I haven't combed my hair. And if I'm not wearing makeup, you don't care. It doesn't matter one iota to ya when my lipstick is askew. I'm lucky to have a horse like you. When I say let's go for a ride, you go along. And I'm singing while I ride, you like my song. You got shoulders I can lean on, you're a pal and pulls me through. I'm mighty lucky to have a horse like you. I'll admit I've had some horses I've traded, shipped, and sold. But you're the one and only horse I'll ride till I get old. Everybody had a horse that was their friend. cause if it's heaven, I'll have a horse like you. I'm mighty lucky to have a horse like you.
Judy Fisher's A Horse Like You, and do you have a pretty good horse now, Monica?
I have my soulmate right now.
How long have you had your soulmate?
I guess I've had him for 9 years now.
Wow.
He's a Korab. He's half Arab, half Arabian. I mean, he's half Arabian, half quarter horse. And he came off the Rush Creek Ranch, which is very well known endurance circles of producing endurance horses. And he turned out huge. He's almost 1,200 pounds, and he's 15'2", and you never expect him to do endurance, but he's a blast. He's really a lot of fun. He's just a real kind horse.
Oh, wow.
Which, I mean, I just...
And he doesn't care if you don't have your makeup on.
No. No. Not at all. He's a good boy.
No, they're not too judgmental, are they, Jim? Not too judgmental.
Yeah.
Hey, do they have a lot of folks that specialize in breeding and raising endurance horses?
There are some. It's not a sport. We're kind of a niche sport. You know, we're
right.
not driven by breeders. We end up, the predominant breed in endurance are Arabians, especially in the higher distances. You know, it's usually an Arabian or Arabian cross of some kind that excel at the 100-mile and 50-mile distances. There are definitely exceptions. And in the limited distance or 25-mile rides, you see every breed, and every breed has a great chance of doing well. What you get a lot, there are a few breeders, but you get a lot of off-the-track Arabians that aren't doing racing anymore for whatever reason. You get a lot of show horses that didn't work out in the show ring. And you get a lot of just backyard horse owners. I mean, our membership is predominantly backyard horse owners, and, you know, they just ride what they have, and they may breed their horse to something, and then they ride that one. We have a lot of people that rescue horses from kill pens, and they do great.
Oh, really?
It is. We are a very interesting group of people. It's like you should come to a ride and wander around ride camp sometime and ask people about their horse, because you'll probably hear everything.
Oh, well, wow. Well, I promised before the break that we would come back and talk a little bit about the Tevis. And so tell us a little bit about the history of the Tevis Cup, and I think you had some interesting things that happened just a couple months ago at the Tevis.
Yeah, so this year's Tevis was the end of July, and they had
Where's it held?
Okay, it starts in Truckee, California, which is in the Sierra Nevada Mountains by Lake Tahoe, and they ride the Western States Trail down to Auburn, California. And so they had 149 starters and 64 finishers, which is a lower completion rate than normal. It was really low. But they were also dealing with a lot of heat, and they were also dealing with smoke in the air from all the California wildfires. So they don't, you know, the horses couldn't really say, oh, yeah, it's the smoke. But, you know, there's some suspicion that the smoke wasn't helpful. But it's a 100-mile race. They have 24 hours to finish it. And some of my favorite stories is the 13th place horse PL Mercury, owned and ridden by Claire Godwin out of Virginia, is 27 and a half years old.
Wow.
He did it last year when he was 26 and a half years old, and I'm pretty sure he had done it three times prior to that. He's a small Arabian. I think what I read is he's like 14, maybe 14 one hands. He didn't start endurance until he was 15 years old. And he owns the record for the oldest horse to finish Tevis. And he got 13th place.
Wow.
I mean, that is awesome. And then the other thing, I mean, there's lots of awesome things. Like my fellow board member, Heather Reynolds, won the ride. And the last year's Tevis winner, Tennessee Lane, she was in 7th place. But the 8th and 9th place horses are BLM Mustangs.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, and that's pretty exciting. And one of them, M.M. Cody, ended up with the Best Condition Award for the Tevis,
which is basically
the horse they think is, you know, looks the best the next day to go out and ride again. And so, I mean, you know, a shout out to the Mustangs. I mean, go out and get those Mustangs.
Yeah,
you know, they're
tough.
But it was a great, the Tevis, you know, started back in the 50s by Wendell Roby. It's been going on pretty much continuously. I know a few years ago they had to cancel it because of wildfires. I'm not the best historian for the Tevis, but and I know last year they had to change the normal course of the trail because they had so much snow that they couldn't get through one of the normal parts of trail because it was still snowed in.
Wow.
And so they had to change the trail. And so I think there's been issues like that on and off since the 50s. But it's, you know, been on numerous TV shows. It's world renowned. The majority of the riders finish within the last hour of the allowed time limit, you know, which that's not normal. But it tells, you know, for most rides, that's not normal. But it tells you how tough of a ride it is.
Yeah,
What,
now, are they riding 24 hours straight through? Are they riding 24 hours straight through?
Well, they have vet exams that they have to stop for a certain time period and let their horses eat. And they, you know, they eat. But yeah, it's, you know, not like you get to, you know, you can stop for as long as you want, you know, if the vet checks. But, you know, if you do, then you're probably not going to finish in time.
Right.
There's a lot of canyons to go up and down, and then riding in the dark slows many people down.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody's, you know, some people will canter through the trails in the dark, but then other people aren't going to. So, but it's a great competition. They have a great volunteer base. You know, it's exciting for that part of the country. I mean, they look forward to it every year, and they have their own foundation, and they're an organization within themselves to put on that competition. They're a well-oiled machine.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think anybody that's heard of endurance riding has heard of the Tevis. And I know I posted some video from the event this year, and, man, we had tons of people on our Equestrian Legacy Radio website that we're watching and commenting on that. So, wow, that's quite a deal.
And it's
quite
a. And what's also neat is a lot of our members will lease their horses to people from like the East Coast or foreign countries because it's, you know, either cost prohibited to get your horses there, or you know, it's hard on a horse to travel them 3 days across the country. You know, so that's cool. And then sometimes the people then will go back to the East Coast and do the East Coast rides on leased horses from someone else. You know, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of back and forth in those kinds of things, which is awesome.
Right.
do want to mention the Old Dominion, which is another 100-mile race. And where is that held? In Virginia, West Virginia?
That is held, yeah. It's in Virginia, and it's always in June. And it's called the Beast from the East. And so the Old Dominion, they also, besides the 100-mile ride, offer 25 and 50-mile rides, you know, at the within the same weekend. They don't get the same number of riders because besides having the mountains, because this is in the mountains in Virginia, they also have heat and humidity because it's in June.
Right.
But
right.
Remember that 27 and a half horse I told you about that finished Tevis?
Right.
Well, he also finished the Old Dominion in June. And
oh,
he got
wow.
sixth place there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Can you believe that 1 month and then the next month? That's amazing.
Yeah.
And having to travel
yeah,
across
the
country.
Yeah, and he had to grow. Yeah. I mean, he's quite the horse. He's kind of my new horsey hero.
Mine too. Mine too.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, tell us again about your national championships. Give us the date for that. And, again, that's at the Biltmore this year. But what are the dates for that?
Okay, the 50-mile national championship is on Thursday, September 20th. And then the 100-mile national championship is on Saturday, September 22nd. And
okay.
So, I mean, if you live in the area, come out and watch. I mean,
yeah, do you have a lot of – do you have a lot of folks that come out just to watch the races? Or parts of?
I mean, we're not a huge – yeah, we're not a huge spectator sport. It's kind of like watching a marathon.
Right.
You know, it's like – it's, you know, it's fun to watch the vet checks, with the start of the ride, the finish of the ride. But, yeah, there's not a ton of, you know, spectatorness. But it – but, you know, it'll give people an idea what it's about. And on the Friday between the two national championships, they're having a 25-mile ride that anybody can enter. And so then that's kind of, yeah, that way other people can come out and join in and be part of the fun. And you know, and what's cool, what I really like about endurance is, you know, the 100-mile riders are just as happy for the 25-mile riders. You know, we all want everybody to excel. We all
right.
want horses to be happy and healthy. There isn't all this animosity between, oh, you're just a this rider or you're a that rider. It's like, man, we all just want to have fun and enjoy each other. And I think that's why I have stayed so interested in this organization for so long is, it's, as a friend of mine, this is her tribe
right.
of people. And it's like, and I totally feel the same way. This is my tribe. I mean, these are
mm-hmm.
people that get me.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Great.
So, but the Biltmore would be a great place to come watch because, you know, there's other stuff to do too. You can always go to the winery for a while and then come back and watch
yeah.
some more.
I'll drink to that, Jim, won't you?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, now, if I want to get involved in the American Endurance Ride Conference, how can I do that?
Well, it's awesome if you have a computer and the internet to go to aerc.org, and then you can also call our office at 866-271-2372. And the ladies in the office will get you set right up. And we are having a new member special right now that if you join now, you get the rest of 2018 plus all of 2019 for $88.75.
Oh, wow.
Which is
wow.
a really good price because our normal yearly membership for an individual is $75.
Oh, yeah.
And that
yeah.
includes 12 issues of our Endurance News magazine, which is amazing. It's an amazing magazine. It's got articles every month on trails, education, research. The veterinarians are always writing articles for us.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very informational magazine. which we're very proud of. And I mean, I think it's a magazine that would benefit people that didn't even do endurance because of all the knowledge that's in it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And just to be able to keep up with what's happening across the country would be pretty cool. So that's AERC.org is the website?
Yes. Yes.
AERC.org is the website. So jump on that and get involved in the sport. I mean, it sounds to me like there's something for everybody. So I'm looking for these newcomer things where I can do 10 or 15 miles. That would kind of fit me just about right,
yeah.
Jim.
Yes.
You just need to come over and do an introductory ride.
There you go. There you go. Mm-hmm. And the Biltmore would be a good place. You know, it's located where there's a large population center. So if you'd like to see the Biltmore and go by the winery and enjoy some great competition, that would be a place to be later on this month. Well, Monica, you have been absolutely a great guest today. Very, very informative.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Jim, you done
thank
good,
you.
My friend. You done good, my friend.
Eric. Well, I knew it was Monica. She's a real pro at her work and loves her work and the horses. That's the kind of folks we have on here.
Well, we would be remiss if we didn't talk about Backcountry Horsemen of America. Anything going on with BCHA that we need to know about? And give us your website.
Well, it's fairly quiet. Everybody's this time of year out in the forest with the trails and keep them open. And we've got our fires out west, and we got our folks that are in the fire vicinity helping there with packing in supplies and doing what they can, because they're losing a lot of places where we've ridden. Cindy and I have ridden in Oregon, has been burned out. You know, when we had the Huffsteaders, Phil and Casey, on a couple of months ago, from Oregon, but part of their area has got the three sisters we talked about on the show is completely burned. So it's getting rough out there. So I think a lot of our folks are working with that. But to get a hold of us, it's bcha.org, bcha.org.
Okay. All right. So that another organization that you definitely need to get involved with and help to keep these trails open for all of these trail users that are out there. So this has been a fantastic show. Again, Monica, you have just been absolutely wonderful. And again, Jim, you've done good. We want to invite you to join us again next Thursday for the Campfire Cafe that begins at noon Central Time, followed by Saddle Up America, starting immediately after. And we've got a great show lined up for you next week, so please tell folks about Equestrian Legacy Radio and join us if you can. And we remind you, as we always do, if you climb in the saddle, to get ready for the ride on Equestrian Legacy Radio. Thanks for listening. We're going to close the show out with a great song from our good friend Mary Kay. It's called Women and Horses. Thanks for listening.
From the mountain to rain, been seemingly tired of its tumbling and churning. It slows for rest as it spreads across the plain. And then where it widens in cool rocky ripples, where eons of floods made the wide valley floor, sunlight through pines paints in dapples and stipples. A woman looks out from her rough cabin floor. The sun and the wind have both left their mark. They burn her and lash her from daybreak till dark. It's tough to natural forces. This country sure tough on women. And in the grass, growing tall, thick and green. The fine-blooded mares and the foals they are raising go on with their commonplace daily routine. And far down the meadow, she sees the old gelding, the pensioner here to live out his life. Like her, this old pony is tired in aging. The pensions aren't paid to a cattleman's wife. There's chores every day, her work never stops. There's no time for rest, and she works till she drops. She's not keeping score, but she wonders who's winning. This country's sure tough on horses and women. Horses and women. Horses and been taken by wrinkles. Her hair, once her glory, is frosted with gray. Her eyes are surrounded by crow's feet and crinkles. And youth fades a little with each passing day. But now from the doorway she spots the lone rider. She thinks of the obstacles they've overcome, and she smiles at the thought that he'll soon be beside her, and scorns that old adage repeated by some. Life's tough in this land, no one can deny, but she's got fresh air, the grass. Born city life and haughty discourses. This country's just right for women and horses. Women and horses. Women and horses.